Well, here's what I don't get. Why are they all protecting Eb?
Maybe they all have something to hide.
Like what?
I think they're on the down low.
Down what?
The down low. Black men having sex with other men.
Every one of these guys is married. Some have kids.
That's sex on the down low. They say it doesn't mean they're gay.
What does it mean?
It's just sex. They hang out, have a few drinks, pretend that what goes on downstairs isn't who they are. You grow up being black, you're supposed to be a man, become a father. Church, your family, your friends, they all see being gay as a white man's perversion.
Well, white men have trouble dealing with it, too. There's a whole epidemic of gay white men on crystal meth. They have to get high to have sex.
It's different for black men. They go out, have sex with other men, then come home, have sex with their woman, and pretend they're straight. Well, look at me. I just know stuff.
City, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous. These are their stories.
Hey guys, welcome to Munch My Benson. It's late night in
this is really after dark.
The Upper East Side of Manhattan. My name is Adam. I'm joined on the line by Josh Dugan. How are things up in the North Country, Josh?
It's, you know, mid-April. We're recording on, what, April 14th, and we have had, it's not substantive and it's not sticking, but we've had snow the last 2 days.
Damn. That sucks. Yeah. It's been total hot bullshit here. Today was like 80 degrees. It was downright hot.
Windy as fuck here. Mm. So windy. Like planes, the airport was all fucked up today because of how windy it was. Like it was stupid. The highest wind recorded in the cities was like 56 miles an hour today.
Oof,
and with a high of like 42.
Oof, that's brutal. Yeah. is brutal. That is you walk outside and you walk right back in.
Yeah. I mean, I basically went to the garage today. That is it. I didn't exit the garage.
Man, I went all over the place today. Max and I rode the train downtown. So there's been a lot going on in this town. Let me think of this is a
you think
current events segment. So the
which is not going to play very well in a fucking month and a half or whatever.
So the other day, I was going to go do some errands that required riding the train with Max, and then I find it's like 8:30 in the morning, and I'm doing my thing. Max is playing with his toys, and I'm looking at Twitter, and there's a fucking attack in a subway station in Brooklyn.
Yep.
And turns out none of the cameras worked in that station, or none of the Wi-Fi didn't work in the station. The cameras did work, but for all intents and purposes, the cameras didn't work. And the police didn't actually ask MTA to shut down the transit system, nor did they have people nearby looking for this guy. And so the guy escaped and was on the loose, still swiping his Metro card for over 24 hours. Yep. Until he himself calls himself in, which still doesn't get the fucking cops to come arrest him. It takes a Syrian dude named Zach and his buddies at the vape store seeing the dude, seeing cops across the street, and running over and grabbing them to get them to arrest this fucking guy who shot 10 people and his attack ended up injuring 30, something like that. Anyways,
would have shot more if his gun didn't jam, too.
Yeah, so let's hear it for the shitty gun manufacturers and their bad guns that didn't work. Because thank you for not killing people. Anyways, big props to Zach and his buddies at the vape store in the East Village. Because at least they're looking out for us if the NYPD isn't. Also, of course, and this should come as no surprise to listeners of this show or followers of the news, the FBI knew this guy well and decided he wasn't a threat.
Sure.
Yeah.
Of course not.
But see, oh gosh, that was just one thing. Also, my state's lieutenant governor was arrested on kind of big rank corruption charges. He was taking bribes, essentially. kind of doing the quid pro quo without hiding it the way that most public officials in this state do. Today, Max and I did some errands downtown. We rode the train all the way down to Chinatown. I did the thing that I haven't done yet, which is kind of weird considering I do this podcast, but I go to Chinatown all the time. And Chinatown is like a block away from the New York Superior Court building, which is, you know, the steps that the lawyers walk down in all of the Law and Order franchises. Yeah. And finally, I went with Max to that building to take a selfie in front of the courthouse steps. So I was like on Center Street looking down at it and going, man, I should just go do it. I haven't been down there, so fuck it. Let's go. So we did. That was fun. We had dumplings and got some groceries at the Chinese grocery store. Anyways, Josh, I think we should get into this episode because... Yeah.
Patreon listeners got a lot of preamble.
Kenny Rogers talk. But what I will say is that this episode goes there in a way that SVU... should not and hopefully would not go nowadays.
No. I mean, when I decide that it's probably prudent to like make a count of all of the questionable things that are said.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did episode, that. I didn't.
Oh, I did it.
And I don't even know which problematic thing you're talking about because there's more than one.
Well, there are 5. I had 6 categories nice. That I was taking counts on.
Fantastic. All right. So let's jump into this. We are covering an episode called Lowdown from season 5. It is episode 20. Before we get there, Josh, you're drinking anything? I know you're...
I'm drinking 2 somethings. I'm almost through my tumbler of Jameson rocks. And I've got a Hams also.
I'm drinking a Montauk Wave Chaser IPA. I think it's their mainline IPA. It's a good one. I like it.
Is it like a West Coast or is it a New England?
It might be a West Coast. It has no descriptions on it, but it's definitely not a hazy.
Not a hazy.
So yeah. It's not a New England or anything. So I think it is a West Coast, but it's nice, very drinkable. I don't know that I've had this one before. I've had their hazy. I've had a few of their other beers. I really like, they have a Cold Day IPA, they call it. And I really like that one.
Nice.
But this one's good. And we can get it at the Duane Reade, with which I have so many problems. But I sent my wife down there to buy beer and
we didn't even get grocery talk.
I know, not yet. Actually,
did they turn your wife away?
No. She didn't bring the child with her. So I'm just glad she went before the police riot happened. I didn't even get into that. But
oh yeah, I'm a little surprised you didn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, Adam sent video from his phone.
Yeah.
Of a police riot that was happening literally on his block.
While I'm writing the recap for this episode, I have to stop because I hear 3 guys shouting, "The police are killing us! The police are killing us!" And I'm going like, all right, what the fuck is this? And I look outside the window and I look down my block. I live very close to Gracie Mansion, which is the mayor's residence, which is why this happens here.
Yeah.
But I look down the block and there's a like phalanx of police, like, I don't know, 50 cops in formation marching up the street, following these like 3 dudes that are kind of like walking away from them and filming. And then the dudes say, like, run, run, run. And they start running. And then all the cops start running. And then I went to the other window and looked. And I saw 2 people getting arrested at my laundromat across the street. I guess one of them had tried to hide inside the new, like, I think it's Israeli restaurant that opened up there a couple weeks ago that I haven't been to yet. But
it wasn't Palestinian chicken.
No, it's not Palestinian chicken. They have shakshuka. So, people like to say shakshuka. I'll say it 1 or 2 more times during this episode. But yeah, so they tried to bust into the shakshuka place and they got arrested by a massive crowd of police. I filmed just with the idea that, maybe I'd be helping somebody out with that filming. But it seems like at least what...
They turned the corner.
What I witnessed in the 2 kind of windows, there was no... brutality going on that I witnessed. Don't really know why those guys were being arrested because I didn't see them do anything wrong, but who knows. Anyways, Lowdown season 5 episode 20. Jesus Christ. So what my wife told me while we were watching this for the first time is, you better be careful, Adam. I'm just going to preface this before we start this. You better be careful. I said, this isn't me that needed to be careful. This is the showrunners of SVU that approved this script. They're the ones that needed to be careful. Anyway, so...
This episode is...
highly problematic.
Yeah.
I will do my best. I'm going to throw that out there before I get started, because I think I did a good job, but of course I did not edit this recap, so I don't know, but I think I did a good job.
But he's recapping an episode of television that was aired.
Yes, that was aired. That is up on Hulu right now. Without trigger warnings.
I just watched it. Yeah. Again.
All right.
No trigger warnings. That one of the most transphobic things I've seen.
It's pretty shocking.
And all for a red herring.
It's pretty shocking. All right. With that out of the way. It's a busy night at the open-air sex market under the Brooklyn Bridge until officers Bamford and Robbins chase the Nightwalkers off with some decidedly 2004 humor, and then find a man dead in his car with women's leggings tied around his neck and lipstick on his raincoated member. Once SVU arrives, it doesn't take long to get a positive ID on our Vic. Why, you might ask? Well, our dead man is Bronx ADA Jeffrey York, a.k.a. Olivia Benson's ex-boyfriend. The details of the case don't quite add up. Straight-laced ADA in a known prostitution area, dead from being blindsided and strangled to death? Huh. Finn finds the fingerprints of the frequently arrested Keisha Brown in York's car, but Brown says York was dead when she found him. Brown did steal a gym bag from the back seat, which is found by O'Halloran in a dumpster, and which leads them to Tina Gardner, an investigator for the Bronx DA's office. She, in turn, points them towards Hector Alvarez, who'd just been convicted for murder in the Bronx and had threatened York's life at trial. The other ADA on the Alvarez trial, Andy Abbott, walks Benson and Stabler through the details of the Alvarez case. He'd strangled two or three Vicks trying to make a name for himself, and Abbott took his threats very, very seriously. They meet Alvarez and his attorney at Rikers, and while both of them are downright despicable, it's clear that Alvarez had nothing to do with this murder. While the team struggles to figure out what York was doing between leaving work in the Bronx and being murdered on the Lower East Side, Bronx DA Francisco Martinez arrives at the precinct to talk to Cragen. He thanks Cragen for his discretion, then hands him a stack of York's bank statements. York had been withdrawing $500 cash every 3 days and stopped paying his bills, so something was definitely going on. But what? His tox screens came back negative for drugs, and it's not clear why someone could be blackmailing him. Thankfully, the condom did hold some clues. There was unsmudged lipstick on it, and it appeared to have been placed post-mortem. And the semen in it did not belong to our Vic. Do what now?
Such a weird turn.
Once the press gets a hold of this story, the tension ratchets up. Who was the mystery man in the car with Jeff? Why hadn't the credit cards from his stolen wallet been used? Liv and Elliot check out York's apartment, where they discover that Jeff had a scheduled meeting over drinks with Abbott the night of his death. They also find antiretrovirals, implying he was HIV positive, which explains the cash withdrawals. He was trying to hide his disease status from his office. This has potentially disastrous implications for Jeff's ex, Liv, but she shrugs it off as they head over to Andy Abbott's house to find out if and why he's hiding his drink date with the dead man. He says that he and Jeff got drinks together almost every night after work, so he'd forgotten to mention it with the shock of Jeff's death. Anyways, Abbott had to split for his poker game, so he left Jeff at the bar. The bar is a fancy hotel bar in Manhattan, far from the Bronx courthouse. The concierge confirms that York was a hotel regular and that he was talking to retired NFL running back Deshaun McGovern. McGovern claims that he'd just run into York at the hotel and that he and York were nothing but acquaintances. Munch and Finn have been doing some digging into case files and discovered that the MO details in this case, strangled with leggings, lipstick on a condom, and a stolen wallet, all match details in separate cases tried by none other than Andy Abbott. Maybe Andy killed York. These case files are not probable cause for a DNA sample, so Elliot heads off to talk to Abbott while Warner calls Benson to the morgue to run an off-the-books HIV test. Abbott's wife, Mary Ellen, shows up at the SVU precinct looking for her husband, who thinks he is helping Elliot dig through the case files. Benson wants to tell Mary Ellen about her potential AIDS exposure, but Wong and Cragen both put the kibosh on that immediately. Benson and Stabler confront Abbott about his potential relationship with the deceased, and as you might expect, he gets super pissed and storms off. He says he left Jeff at the hotel bar to head to his weekly poker night. The SVUs interview the other poker players, all well-to-do black men, including football player McGovern. The men seem to be protecting Abbott, but Finn has a different explanation. He thinks the men are on the down low, that they are otherwise straight black men who get together to have gay sex and then act as if nothing happened. Armed with this completely unsubstantiated theory, Finn takes the lead on interviewing McGovern. He quickly leans in with his down-low accusations. He threatens to expose Deshaun to the world. Deshaun explains that the Poker Night sexcapades had been going on for 4 years, and that Jeff had fallen in love with Andy at work, and Andy asked McGovern to scare York away. He then tells Finn that Abbott killed York by accident to protect his status in the community. Abbott is arrested and tells Benson and Stabler a new story. The night at the hotel bar, York confessed his love to Abbott. Abbott told him he didn't feel the same way, then left. Abbott couldn't find a cab and was still outside waiting when Jeff left, who then offered to give him a ride to the poker game in Brooklyn. On the way, Jeff hired a sex worker to have sex with both of them. Abbott claims he left upon blowing his load and miraculously found a cab immediately in this known sex work strip, then head out to his poker night. He still claims York was alive when he left. Novak isn't convinced you can make this case, so she and Finn try to get McGovern to testify. He is not at all interested in having his career and reputation ruined. Then Warner tells Liv she's negative, but doesn't have any useful testimony, so the trial is kind of up in the air. When Mary Ellen unloads at Benson and Novak back at the precinct, Novak goes full Novak and tells the angry wife to get tested for HIV.
The fullest Novak.
This is not great. And Abbott's lawyer wants to get Novak disbarred. Novak seeks out Mary Ellen to apologize, who then tells Novak that her life is in ruins, but since Novak's scheme worked, Mary Ellen visits Andy and Rikers. She tells him that she still loves him, even though her husband fucked up in multiple different ways, but she can't forgive him if he forces this case to go to a trial, which will ruin hers and a whole lot of other of her friends' families. He then tearfully apologizes and accepts Novak's offer of manslaughter one, which brings a sentence of 7.5 to 15 years. Mary Ellen and Andy hug for probably the last time, and we are left with a Casey Novak is not good at being ethical or following rules, Dick Wolf.
Ain't that the truth?
So there was a lot that I left unsaid in this recap because I did not feel comfortable putting, you know, the proverbial pen to paper on what SVU is actually talking about.
Yeah. So many problems with this episode.
Let's just say it's a product of its era. I think it probably didn't feel as shocking in 2004 as it does now.
No, surely not.
But it really feels shocking now.
Yeah, 18 years later, it's really jarring to hear them. Well, I've got a count.
Yeah.
I counted all of the problem areas. So.
Apparently, Josh has multiple categories for problem areas, too. So I'm interested in getting into that. But I guess we should talk about these guest stars. Because
we have two weird ones that are going to take up a lot more time than everybody else.
It seemed kind of light on guest stars to me, at least as far as names go.
Yeah, but, very much. So we've already talked about William H. Burns, who's Officer Robbins, one of the two unis that... Non-cue ball one. This is the fourth time we've seen him. No, shit, way more than that. One, two, three, four, five, sixth time.
We've seen him a lot.
I said, yeah. He was in Stolen, Juvenile, Pandora, Futility, and Witness. Yeah. In Witness, he's a PO.
Okay.
Everything else, he's a cop and usually unnamed, but...
We definitely saw him in this exact same role in the one where...
In every other one. Stolen, Juvenile, Pandora, and Futility. He is this. We talked about him in Munch My Benson episode 83. We're burning through pedos. Yeah. We've also talked about Benton Green, who's playing Terrence Baker in this. One of the down low guys. Mm-hmm. We saw him in Motherly Love, season 18, episode 10, where he was playing Trey's father. Mm-hmm. That was Munch My Benson episode 77, given the genital geometry of everything. Mm. We don't know that it wasn't the poop shoot. So we've talked about both of them before. They both make it a brain melter because they're playing different characters. So that's established. First up, only because he's most important, not because of his credits, and not because of the biographical information that was available, because there's not much, and I kind of had to do some digging to get even one thing. Anyway, Michael Beach, who's playing Andy Abbott. He was born in Roxbury, Mass. Yeah. He was a running back at the Noble and Greenow School, a boarding school in Dedham, Massachusetts. Got his BFA from Juilliard. Again, no biographical information. But there are a lot of credits. Yeah. He's in the films End of the Line, Lean on Me, The Abyss, Internal Affairs, Cadence, One False Move, Shortcuts, True Romance, Waiting to Exhale, Soul Food, Like Mike 2, Street Ball, The Red Dawn Remake, Broken City, Insidious Chapter 2, Patriot's Day, If Beale Street Could Talk, Aquaman, Inheritance, and The Harder They Fall. He's also been main cast in The Street, Under Suspicion, Third Watch, Crisis, and Truth Be Told. And he's had recurring roles in ER, where he was basically playing the same character who HIV'd his significant other. And then recurring roles in Stargate Atlantis, Soul, Sons of Anarchy, The Game, The Client List, Secrets and Lies, The Pitch, The 100, Dynasty, SWAT, For the People, The Rookie, Swamp Thing, Chicago PD, Cherish the Day, SEAL Team, and Mayor of Kingstown.
He's in a lot of stuff, man.
He's in a lot of stuff, like, while he is fucking main cast in Truth Be Told.
Yeah.
Like, he's recurring in, I don't know, six shows since 2019?
Yeah.
It's nuts. Anyway. So that's it for Michael Beach. Yeah. Moving on. Next up, I've got Marlo Thomas, who's playing Judge Mary Clark,
who we haven't talked about one scene, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, no, we haven't hit an episode with her yet.
Yeah.
She was born in Detroit to Rose Marie Cassaniti and Danny Thomas, the comedian who starred in Make Room for Dottie. Yeah. Ugh, fucking hell. The comedian who starred in Make Room for Daddy, which then became the Danny Thomas Show in season 4. He also founded St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital.
Huh, weird.
That's why she's on all the commercials. I'll talk a little more about that in a second. But she went to Marymount High School and graduated from USC with a teaching degree. Her early career featured mostly one-offs on TV shows, with a season on The Joey Bishop Show as Joey's daughter. Her big break came when Mike Nichols cast her in the London production of Neil Simon's Barefoot in the Park. After a pilot didn't get ordered a series at ABC in 1965, a programming executive said they wanted to cast her in her own series, and she came up with the concept of a show about a young woman who leaves home for New York to pursue acting and the struggles therein, which eventually became That Girl. She was only the third woman to produce her own series, following Gertrude Berg and Lucille Ball. The show ran for 5 years, ending in 1971. The network and the show's sponsor wanted her to end the show with her character marrying her longtime boyfriend, but she refused on the grounds of not wanting to say that the only happy ending for a woman is marriage. She was nominated for 4 Emmys during her run on the show, so 4 out of the 5 years she was Emmy nominated, and she won a Golden Globe for the show in 1967. After That Girl, she attended the Actors Studio, studying with Lee Strasberg until his death in 1982, and then with Strasberg disciple Sandra Seacat. She was a California delegate to the Democratic National Convention in 1972 and helped the McGovern campaign alongside Gloria Steinem, who's a lifelong friend, Patricia Carbine, and Letty Cotton Pogrebin, probably butchered her last name. She co-founded Ms. Foundation for Women, the first women's fund in the U.S. She won 2 Emmys for Outstanding Children's Programming for her Free to Be series based on the children's book she wrote in 1972, Free to Be, You and Me. She won another for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Miniseries for Nobody's Child in the mid-80s, which was a TV movie. She was nominated for 1 more Emmy and won a Daytime Emmy for Outstanding Individual Achievement in Children's Programming Performers for The Body Human, Facts for Girls. Yes. She's got a Best Spoken Word album for Children Grammy. She's been in the films Jenny, Thieves, In the Spirit, The Real Blonde, LOL, and Ocean's 8. This is one of 4 SVUs as Judge Clark for her. On TV, she was Rachel's mom on Friends. She also had a recurring role in the Wet Hot American Summer 10 Years Later series. She is the National Outreach Director for St. Jude's, and she's been married to Phil Donahue since 1980, who she met while she was a guest on his show. Next up, Peter Riegert, defense attorney, Chauncey Zirko.
Yeah.
He was born in the Bronx to a piano teacher and a food wholesaler. He grew up in Hartsdale, New York. He graduated from Ardsley High School and then from the University of Buffalo. Yeah. So I guess he's an honorary Buffalonian.
He's a part-time Buffalonian.
He settled on a career in acting after teaching 8th grade, waiting tables, and doing social work. He debuted on Broadway in the musical Dance With Me in 1975. He was in 2 episodes of MASH, and then he made his film debut in Animal House. You've seen him in the films National Lampoon's Movie Madness, Local Hero, which is a really kind of low-key great film by Bill Forsyth, who everyone should watch. And Mark Knopfler did the soundtrack for that.
He shares my birthday.
Nice. Yeah. Also, he was in Crossing Delancey, Oscar, The Mask, Traffic, We Bought a Zoo, American Pastoral, and King of the Corner, which he also wrote and directed. This is one of 7 SVUs as Chauncey Zirko. He was also main cast in Show Me a Hero, Dads, The Beast, Middle Ages, and the Ellis Island miniseries. He's had recurring parts on The Sopranos, Damages, The Good Wife, One Tree Hill, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Disjointed, and Succession. He was nominated for an Oscar for writing and directing a live-action short by Courier based on an O. Henry short story. He was also Emmy-nominated for his performance in Barbarians at the Gate, one of those old HBO movies.
I remember that one, yeah.
I remember it happening. I never fucking saw it.
I'm pretty sure I saw it. It was like a hostile takeover fucking movie. Sure. 80s Wall Street shit.
Yeah. He lived with Bette Midler in the 70s. And he married crime novelist Cornelia Reed in 2019.
Huh. Interesting.
Dude's so old. Yeah, why is he getting married in 2019?
Hey, good for him.
What a weirdo.
Good for him.
I've only got 2 left. I've got David Aaron Demain, who's playing Dushan McGovern. Mm-hmm. He's done a ton of stage work, netting a Drama Desk Award nomination for Outstanding Actor in a Musical in 2020 for his turn in Transport Group's off-Broadway production of The Unsinkable Molly Brown. He's also appeared in the plays and musicals Tommy, Big River, Riverdance, To Kill a Mockingbird. This is early aughts. To Kill a Mockingbird, not the Sorkin one. Porgy and Bess, The Color Purple, Showboat, and The Book of Mormon. He's had recurring roles in Chicago PD, Jet, the Cinemax show with Carla Gugino, and Dynasty, the new one, not the old one. And he's been in 1 episode of the original series. Lastly, a very quick one.
Nice.
Ian Bedford is playing Officer Bamford, the more transphobic cop.
The bald one.
Yeah. This is 1 of 6 SVUs that he's been in, all as this character, including season 5, episode 13, Hate, which we covered back in Munch My Benson, episode 73. they really got that kid to do the racism. He got his BA in humanities from Yale and his MFA in acting from UC San Diego. He was nominated for a Joseph Jefferson Award, which is the like Chicago Theater Award, for his performance in A View from a Bridge. I feel like it's actually A View from the Bridge, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I copied it right. And he's also been in multiple episodes of Blue Bloods and Chicago PD. Everybody else was either in episodes that I felt like I could wait until they're brain melting, yeah, or were not in other shit that was interesting.
No, most of these people don't have very many credits at all. Well, all right then, I'm going to go ahead and close all these IMDb tabs because
yeah, fuck that shit. Yeah. We should re-up drinks.
Yeah, that's a great idea. The problematic shit starts before we get to the transphobia, which I know raised Josh's hackles. So the first thing we see, we hear kind of loud hip hop music, and we see a car kind of speeding past a black woman who is dressed as one would expect a prostitute to be dressed, right? But then sure, we see another woman who appears mm-hmm. to be Latina. And there's salsa music yeah. playing in the car that passes by her. And it's like...
wow. So like racial or racist music cues. Yeah,
exactly.
Fantastic. I'm glad you picked up on that.
Yeah. I was like, what? For real? They did that? Because the sound mix was very strange in this opening scene.
In the open?
Because it goes from these two like loud musics. And I live in Manhattan, so it's weird when it's quiet. And as soon as those cars drive off in the scene, it is very quiet as the cops walk yeah. up and start flinging epithets left and right.
It's okay. So from the moment that the like introductory Steve Zernkelton, from the moment that he is done saying something, it is 15 seconds. Before we get our first transphobic comment from Officer Bedford. 15 seconds.
But what I'm impressed of is within that 15 seconds, they
found a way to be racist. Yeah, they did the racism twice. We should probably mention this episode was directed by Judd Taylor. This is his last credit as he died a few years after this.
Okay.
But he was like in his 70s when he directed this episode.
Okay.
He started as an actor, mostly in TV shows, but he was Goff, who I haven't seen the movie recently enough to remember who that character is, but he was Goff in The Great Escape.
Huh.
When he was on Dr. Kildare, he got the chance to direct. And since then he pretty much just completely pivoted to directing, mostly TV shows and movies. He worked as a director on 68 shows or movies, including 5 episodes of Star Trek, the original series.
Nice.
He also directed the Kung Fu, The Legend Continues TV movie, which, you know, was later retrofitted to be a 2-part pilot.
Hell yeah.
He directed Guinevere, which was a mid-90s Arthurian TV movie starring Ooh. Cheryl Lee as Guinevere.
Ooh, I like the sound of that.
Yeah. And he was nominated for an Emmy for a Joseph McCarthy TV movie called Tail Gunner Joe, where Peter Boyle was playing Joseph McCarthy back in the mid-70s.
Huh.
This is interesting. He did 4 other episodes of SVU also.
Did you see what his cause of death was?
No, I didn't look it up.
It wasn't like... Did
racism
it have to do with like
no, transphobia it was probably transphobia.
No, that wasn't his fault, that was the writer's fault. I know, but I want to know if the fucking Shaolin monks did him in the way that they
autoerotic asphyxiation. They took him out too.
A setup. Yeah,
the weird thing is though, that's the only Kung Fu The Legend Continues that he did, because I loved that show. I watched
they
so
probably
much
scared
Kung Fu
his
Legend
ass
Continues.
Off of it, dude, probably. That's why. Yeah, before
the ancient scared him away.
before they put, you know, live bullets in what's his name that we saw last week's gun, you know?
Yeah, Brandon Killed. Crow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or Brandon
Crow. Crow.
Jesus.
Brandon Lee.
Sorry. Austin Austin anyway. Brandon Lee, mm-hmm. the Crow.
mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I did a count.
Yeah.
So, they made 3 jokes that were transphobic, mm-hmm. but didn't include the words tranny, transvestite, he, she, mm-hmm. or hooker. Now, the episode in total, in addition to these three transphobic jokes, said tranny 3 times, mm-hmm. said transvestite 4 times, mm-hmm. said he, she's once, uh-huh. said hooker 9 times.
Now,
and threw in a singular use of the word, well, the other F-bomb that I don't want to say.
Yeah, that's true.
Threw that
yeah.
in for good measure uh-huh. to make sure that no, we're not just incensing sex workers or the trans community.
Well, yeah, well, we're going after everybody. At yeah. this one. Now, I'd say with that last one, that was that actually worked with the character, right? Because
I'm not saying it didn't, and I think that it.
I think that it
worked in the same way that it worked with the Fred Phelps character.
Yeah.
Though it's still jarring as fuck to hear it on a network show.
It is, absolutely. Now, with that character was, of course, like trying to deny his own sexuality uh-huh. to the cops. And so it's like, yeah. it made sense to that character. Now, the thing with using hooker.
9 times.
Yeah. Well, it is an epithet. However, as I've mentioned on this show before, my research into the etymology of the word hooker actually has this being fairly accurate. So this takes place under the Brooklyn Bridge, which is technically in the Two Bridges neighborhood yeah. Where that is. But it is very close to Corlear's Hook, which if yeah. my research is correct, is where the term comes from. So as people, sex workers walking the streets at night in the around Corlear's Hook were termed hookers.
Yeah, they're hookers in the literal etymological sense.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, in what the slur became, which is ladies of the night, harlots, yeah. strumpets. Yeah, man,
I didn't say that. I didn't say that. Harlots and strumpets out there that I like. Anyway, so. And I mean, the transphobia is just going to,
it's wild, man.
We're going to keep noting it.
It's wild. Now
Elliot doesn't know the difference between hot pants and leggings.
He does not.
Which I mean is embarrassing, not as embarrassing as all the transphobic and hooker talk.
I think it was pretty funny. I think in 2022, we've all had like, leggings became very popular, just women's wear in general.
And he probably wears jeggings just to show his hot glutes off.
He absolutely does now. But yeah. in 2004, that Lululemon didn't exist yet. It hadn't taken over my, my video store, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I can understand why. Elliot is exactly the kind of guy who's going to be complaining that his daughters are wearing leggings to school, right? In about 2 years.
At least put a skirt over it.
Yeah, exactly. But
to be fair, I'm that guy.
But I did enjoy that little back and forth.
Yeah. So we're a minute 45 in, and yeah. Liv should already not be working this case.
It's her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah. She very much should not be working this case. That is, if ever there was a conflict of interest or yeah.
And it's not just like it's her ex-boyfriend, but it's her ex-boyfriend who's an assistant district attorney
yep.
in a different borough. So if you
this
think
is
about,
a high profile case that she should not be fucking
people,
that
are
she should
be,
not be involved with at all.
Like district attorney's offices and 1PP are going to be up everybody's ass about yep. this. Okay, Munch is doing good police work in this one, so maybe this
he may be the only one.
This should be Munch should be lead on this one.
Finn,
I was gonna say Finn is doing a lot of work here, but he's doing a lot of jumping to conclusions.
He's right though.
He is.
He jumped to the right conclusion.
But it's like Dennis Hopper.
No one else knows what the down low even is.
I know, but it's like Dennis Hopper in fucking Apocalypse Now. Like, there's no fractions in space, man. You can't land on fractions. It's like Finn is just like flinging his body into outer space and happens to land on one of a myriad of possible explanations for what could be going on here.
I don't know. Finn's really good at sniffing this shit out. So they are super casual in how much they're dehumanizing Keisha Brown, the trans sex worker here.
Oh,
the first 5 minutes of the episode are basically dedicated to transphobia, and it is fucking shocking.
Now, she does get a chance to kind of stand up for herself later, which I do appreciate.
Uh-huh. But these are cops that we're supposed to root for.
I think that...
Not the two unis notwithstanding. The two unis who, whatever, I don't give a shit about them.
No,
but
no.
We're supposed to care about the cops on the unit.
I think that Harmonica Sunbeam can walk away from that role, like, not feeling like...
Yeah, not feeling like, exploited.
Yeah, exactly.
And thrown away.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, it is, like, the cops are transphobic, but she actually... is able to make kind of like a strong statement.
Yeah. Sure.
And as it turns out, it's like not her doing it. So it's like, it's kind of like not even about that. It is just a fucking red herring, but she does have a, like,
but
a
it's point such, to say something. It's such like a casual approach to these.
It's pretty fucking wild.
SVUs are supposed to fucking advocate for victims and supposed to advocate for the marginalized, like, people in the community, you know, the sexual minorities, if you will, or the non cisgendered. And it's just so frustrating to watch this and be like, holy shit, I cannot believe how
I cannot believe Elliot is supposed to be like the seasoned vet on the unit, right?
I mean, Cragen too. Yeah. I mean, fucking, she, Liv says tranny.
Yeah.
It's fucked.
Now.
Liv says tranny very casually. And I know that it's 2004.
Is it unrealistic for cops to say that now, much less in 2004? I don't think so. But.
Liv would never say it now.
Liv would never say it now. No, but would act real life.
And I
kind of
feel like Liv wouldn't have then also, but maybe I'm fucking. Wish casting that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. But the thing is, Josh, that I want to talk about the Keisha Brown character, because Keisha Brown, does this make this a baseball episode?
Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed.
Because her birth name.
Oh, she's Kevin Brown?
She's Kevin Brown. So
the weird thing is I cut that Kevin Brown shit. We talked about Kevin Brown in an earlier episode, but I cut it all out.
Nice.
But
do you think that Keisha has a wicked sinker, or do you think she's more like 2004's Kevin Brown, who's serving up meatballs to David Ortiz?
Didn't Kevin Brown once punch a wall also put himself on the DL?
Yeah, he his Yankees,
when it was still the DL, not the IL. Yeah. I'm not being anti. I'm not being an ableist here.
His Yankees career was not wrapped in glory, because
his lots of careers weren't. His Rangers career wasn't wrapped in glory.
Oh, no, he was fucking great as a Ranger, man.
He had bad seasons as a Ranger.
No, he was good as a Ranger. Look at his stats. He was fucking good. He's like one of the best pitchers the Rangers ever had until including Kenny Rogers, speak of the devil.
What about Nolan?
Besides Nolan, I was going to say, besides Nolan Ryan. But he had the best season, the most wins.
Yeah, I guess he came up.
Yeah, he started in the All-Star game as a Ranger. That's how I know him. And then, he obviously won World
his
Series.
Walk
with
year,
the
he had a
fucking
his
Marlins.
Walk year, he had a 4.05 ERA.
Yeah.
And he had a 4.46 ERA as a 26-year-old. Like, he had bad years.
Oh, absolutely.
As a Ranger.
Yeah. That stadium was not kind to pitching.
His best year was with the Marlins.
Yeah, I mean, he won the World Series, right?
Well, the year before the World Series win, but he finished second in Cy Young voting in 96.
Yeah. No, he had a 1 year with the Rangers where he won like 21 games. He started the All-Star game. He had like a worse second half, so he didn't.
That was a year after his 440 year, right?
Yeah. So.
Oh, no, he had a 446 FIP. Sorry. Way worse.
Yeah.
Anyway. moving on. How long is it going to take O'Halloran to wash the dumpster off of him after this episode?
It sounded like a pretty clean dumpster. He was talking about how many hygiene products were in there. Deodorant.
No, perfume. They were in the bag, not in the dumpster.
No, they were in the dumpster.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. He didn't think that... Sorry, I almost said it. He didn't think that sex workers were as hygienic as they apparently were, because they were throwing...
going back, Liv says... Hookers cut or stab. They don't strangle. I just want to put that out there. I want to see stats on this, because, or at least I want to hear some anecdotal evidence.
Yep.
Because we get anecdotal evidence in this episode, and it says that quote unquote hookers do strangle, because a prostitute strangles a victim in one of the Abbott's cases that he forms his MO from.
One of the three cases he
which is also really habit. It's like they spent all this time on this red herring to then completely,
and then they completely shit the bed with everything. Whatever. I don't even want to get into Abbott's dumb fucking,
it's dumb. Yeah, it's dumb. Dumb. And they just have to shorthand everything because they wasted all this time just
on a transphobic red herring.
Dicks. Yeah.
Yeah. Being assholes. Like, hey, you know, who are the most marginalized people in America? Uh-huh. Is it trans black women? Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, let's go and fucking let's fuck all over them. Now, I didn't really catch it the first time, but the second time I watched it, did you get a good, like, watch of the Jeff York video?
Big time. Huge note about this.
And what about the violent threats?
You get used to it. Defendants say these things all the time. If we walked away from every case where we were afraid of revenge, we couldn't do our job.
Very Danish.
But one thing, it jumps out of the screen. And it's like, well, I've heard this accent before. Where have I heard this accent before? It's
Danny
like,
Beck.
Oh, yeah, that's where.
His, quote, American accent is horrible.
It's not good.
So not bad.
Close. But he and is don't actually worry, like a producer.
This is the first of many, many comments that I have about voices in this episode, because I have a lot of problems with them.
But that the actor like produced Danish TV shows.
Yeah,
I believe.
He's a Danish actor and producer. Yeah. He has a Danish production company. Uh-huh. Yeah. Very much not American, but sure. Jeff York.
Jeff York, Bronx DA.
They're like, we have to get a man beautiful enough to have been able to date Olivia Benson.
I think they would just, I mean.
And to be able to potentially HIV
her. Because he was like Olivia's like ex-BF that they had to give him like voice? Because why couldn't they just like throw his picture up on the screen? We've seen this a million times. Like, why do we have to hear his embarrassing accent?
I bet what happened is they'd already shot the scene where his body's found, and they're like, whatever, and then they're like, oh, we should have him talk, and then they had him talk, and they're like, oh, ooh, fuck, what are we gonna do about this? So Alvarez and his lawyer are comically overboard in this.
They're the pinnacle of this episode.
They are like squint smirking their way through this whole fucking questioning scene at Rikers. It's amazing.
Downright objectionable, both of them. Like,
yeah, they're both odious assholes, but because both of the actors are committing so heavily to this just deciding that, you know what, obviously they only saw their sides. They did not see the script.
No.
But if they had, they'd know that this is like the most offensive thing ever. And so they're just like, whatever, I'm going to lean into that.
Yeah.
And it's something.
That DA Jeff York? Yeah. I put a hit on him.
He doesn't know what he's saying.
I think he knows exactly what he's saying.
The guy sends me away, I get him whacked that night.
My client's having a little fun here.
If you want to have fun, go to Coney Island and ride the cyclone. I don't find dead prosecutors all that amusing.
Oh, easy, Mommy. It was a joke.
It's great. I love it. I mean, because both the, like, the lawyer has already printed out his alibis because he's been indicted for so much shit.
He has to walk into every room with that, with a, like, a explanation for everything. Uh-huh.
Exactly. Fantastic,
now,
man.
There are tons of weird performances in this episode. Uh-huh. And I frankly, I don't know who's the weirdest, but
Alvarez and the attorney are probably the most fun, I think.
They're the most fun. I don't think they're the weirdest, though. I think the weirdest might be Roger Preto, who's playing Bronx DA.
Bronx ADA. Oh, Bronx DA Francisco Martinez, yeah.
It is.
He's doing good for the Ricardo Montalban, I feel like. He's
Well, it's like Ricardo Montalban mixed with David Caruso in CSI Miami. Mm. Like, if he had sunglasses to take off and put back on, he would have done it in his scene. Yeah. It is super weird and not natural.
Oh, did you notice? I'm sorry. Going back a little bit, Cregan's drinking problem rears its ugly head.
Yeah, let's go back to minute 8.
Sorry, Josh. This is something.
I'm joking.
This is one of my notes.
I don't have many more notes, thankfully.
So there's a soda machine, and it says root beer on it. And
oh yeah, I saw that.
We see a soda fall, and mm-hmm. Elliot picks it up.
I don't feel like it's a root beer.
I don't know what it is, but Elliot picks it up and throws it up in the air. Like, he like spins it around and catches it, which is not what one does typically with a carbonated beverage that one finds.
Yeah, I do that shit all the time.
But still, he then hands it to Cregan, who then opens it, which is like,
couldn't see it was, but his back was turned, so he might have tapped the.
But still, have
he
we
might have tapped the thing.
Ever seen Cregan normally order a drink or normally just like get a drink in the show? We've seen it time and time again where
everyone knows
happens.
What he wants.
It's something weird happens, whether it's he's forcing his underlings to bring him the soda, or it's just like the soda appears without him taking mm-hmm. any action, or the coffee. He's got a drinking problem, man. He's got more than one drinking problem.
I really love the post-mortem lipstick print left on the condom schlong.
Yes, same.
With your own jizz.
I mean, we're talking about
beautiful
genital geometry.
Beautiful,
like
chef's kiss, chef's fucking kiss. A post-mortem lipstick print on a condom schlong with your own jizz in the condom.
I mean,
how incredible.
It doesn't, and like, to not think to smear the lipstick either. Elliot's like, the lipstick's not smeared? That
such
can't happen.
Such a clean lipstick print. Mm.
Oh, that never happened at my rainbow parties, you know?
All right, so then we have our newspaper with murder DA and gay sex sleigh, which is a really fun late city final edition of the New York Ledger.
Yeah.
Now, there are two like little sort of like
Thank you for pausing. I was yes. racing through and what I was
No,
watching
I did
this.
Pause it. Uh-huh. One was Leto agrees to OT for workers, page 5.
Like Jared Leto?
I'm assuming this is a jab at Peter Leto, who was the UPM in season 4, the season before this, and was a producer on this season. Uh-huh. So I'm assuming that I'm assuming that Peter Leto would not approve overtime for people. And so this was the graphics department being like, Then there's the other one is Schluter accepts new budget rates. And it feels like that's an inside joke, too, probably, and that maybe that's the network or Wolf Films exec who is in charge of approving the budget.
Nice.
Because there was no Schluter credited as anything on the episode, but...
Yeah.
Then we get our AZT bomb. Mm-hmm. Liv, maybe get checked out.
Yeah, I mean...
Really dragging your feet there.
It's one of those things.
It doesn't really ring true to Liv.
No, Liv is the kind of person who would be like, Elliot, let's take a little, like, Cy Jaunt over to CVS so I can get tested before we go, you know, talk to the next interviewee. It seems like the sort of thing that she would be really upfront about too, and not
pushing try to off. Hide. Like the pushing that off as an Elliot move, or maybe Finn, you know.
It's definitely an Elliot move.
I think it would be a Finn move too.
Well, Elliot would be ashamed of the stigma to bring him in the department, I think. Finn maybe.
Also, Elliot's married and he wouldn't have to, I think, you know. At least at this point. Season 5, Elliot wouldn't. Season 8, Elliot. Season Elliot.
Yeah, once he gets himself a taste of the Danish Long Islander that Benson had. He never gets a
taste of that, though.
He tries.
He tries. He really tries. R.I.P. Elliot's dick getting wet.
Warner says some awesome stuff.
Warner has a bunch of lines that you could just drop in.
The
issue is there's so many. The obvious, like, either intro or outro is Finn explaining the download to everybody.
Yeah.
Like, it's a historic.
It's the thing is, what's so great about it is just how, what a gear shift it is, right? We're like going along in one direction and Finn's like, no, but it's a lovely like frame, right? It's like something out of Citizen Kane or something. There's deep focus, you know, the mise-en-scene.
There's the rack focus and the kids coming down in the background and the sled. And
No, but there's a deep focus in this scene. We have like in the front, we have, I think it's Cragen and Finn and Elliot. Cragen and Elliot and Benson talking. And in the background, Finn is in focus, but he's well in the background, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he stands up and he says, "That's not what's up."
Yeah. No. So DeSean McGovern.
Yeah, we talked to DeSean McGovern. Okay.
He doesn't play. He doesn't read like a running back to me. He feels too big.
Yeah, he's too tall to be a running back. Yeah.
I looked up his height. He's only 6'2", but he still seems like.
He seems big next to the SVUs. He seems like a linebacker.
Yeah, he seems more like a linebacker, exactly.
Linebacker, tight end, something like that. Uh-huh. Yeah, I can see that.
I don't think he's tall enough to be a tight end at this point. Maybe in 2004 he would be, but he'd have to be like 3 inches taller to be a tight end now.
He seems big, right? He seems like a big
No, he
dude.
Definitely seems like a linebacker to me.
Yeah.
It really seems weird how Liv doesn't seem to be able to understand how she could have banged a gay dude.
Yeah, I mean,
I would have known. How would you have known? Like,
did she think
his dick was too hard to be gay? Does she have like a superhuman vagina that can sense like tumescence in degrees that are somehow like, detectable? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I'm sorry, Tamara Tooney. That dick was 99% hard.
yeah. Is she?
But this is the thing. Okay, so like, I'm gonna go back and try to look at this episode with a 2004 lens, and it not saying that it's okay the like transphobia that's on display, but kind of being understanding about like the world was in a different place there, and different things were acceptable on TV than they are now, right? And like,
sure,
and, like. Things that we definitely would never say now could be played for laughs then, and now it feels really bad and gross, but it probably wouldn't have then. What I don't find acceptable is the people writing this fucking show, like this fucking show, which deals with sexuality issues week in, week out, 23 episodes, 23 weeks a fucking year. Not realizing that there's like degree, like sexuality is not black and white, that there's like gray areas and there's like shading in there.
And, oh, because trust me, I have the note about.
And I feel like everybody, even Wong, is kind of like, it's like a binary. There's like straight and gay. And
the weirder thing here is, of course, that Neil Baer was still closeted.
Yeah,
as a showrunner.
Yeah, you're right.
He was closeted after he was closeted until after he was done as showrunner on SVU.
Yeah, I mean, are you thinking about that Wong Liv exchange?
Not just that, because it comes up again. Like, I it's probably hard to, because the guy running the show is so afraid.
Yeah.
Presumably. I don't want to, I guess I don't know.
It's hard to put,
don't want to put myself in that headspace too much.
Yeah.
Sure.
And it's hard to know, sure, like what was professional and what was personal, right? I don't know Neil Baer's exactly story enough to know, yeah, that, to know that well enough to make a judgment, but
I mean, he was definitely living as a straight man with a wife and child at this point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was on, maybe he was divorced at this point, but he was still like playing the part,
at least outwardly.
Yeah. And so this is a weird episode in that respect, because he was very much on the down low.
Yeah. Well, probably so, not with quite the,
but like, yeah, because of this, like, because of that, would he have been dealing with it in especially indelicately?
Yeah.
Well, you know, because he wouldn't want to potentially out himself.
Yeah, but also, yeah, you know, I can see what you're saying, but also maybe because it is like such a black and white issue for him, if we're going to psychoanalyze somebody that we can't ask.
But if it's someone else writing it, would he then want to make the note? Like, would he want to? It's a weird, it's a fucking Ouroboros, you know? Like,
yeah, absolutely. But it is interesting to think about, right? Because, I mean, Wong straight up says to Benson, like, there's been a lot of women. He says, Liv, you're not the first woman to sleep with a closeted, sure, man.
Yeah.
Which I didn't even think about the Baer connection, because that's obviously like his life, at least outwardly at this point.
We're getting into a weird area here.
Yeah, we are. We are. But still, it's like there's interesting psychology going on. But the thing that I found problematic is that just like lack of gray, right? When it's,
yeah, oh, sure,
when it's clear,
sure,
like we're talking, yeah, about this and there's so much fucking gray that we can't even parse the gray, right? Like we're ascribing like intentions to, yeah, writing staff,
oh, sure,
and actors that probably didn't exist at all. But still, it's just like there's so much gray and yet the script has none. It's either like you're hiding it.
Oh, yeah.
And gay.
We're basically trying to parse like how problematic is this, essentially.
And
like that's the work that we're doing in like going and delving into these gray areas. Uh-huh, anyway.
Uh-huh. And I have my own take on this, and we'll see Josh's, because let's keep going. I think we can wrap it up quickly, because
how does Andy think he doesn't need a lawyer because he is one? Would he ever tell a lawyer who's a suspect that they shouldn't, that they should defend themselves?
I mean, of course he does have a lawyer, but
no, he doesn't. But when he is in interrogation, he says, I don't need a lawyer. Yeah. I mean, I think he's obviously trying to like put up the front
bravado
that he's not the suspect, yeah, but whatever.
And he does the whole like reading himself the Miranda rights, which is
the worst. Dumbest. I hate that scene so much. So his poker game,
yeah, so to speak,
it gets a little rowdy.
It's as it does.
It's a heavy action game. If they had more screen time, this would be Top Gun level homoerotic double entendre work going on here, like the flight fight scenes or beach volleyball.
Again, I don't know why they didn't. I don't know why. Like, they didn't.
They didn't need the transphobic bullshit. They could have just leaned into the.
They
could have leaned into the whole
episode.
Poker game down low shit. And
honestly, like, they set up these fairly interesting characters and then didn't give them a chance to really flesh out the story at all.
Like, they could have let that breathe. Like, this is one of the weird situations where you sort of like, because we're recently so used to watching Warren Light seasons, yeah, where you're like, I wish this would have been a Warren Light episode, because they let the character stuff breathe a little more.
Yeah.
And this is actually like, oh, this is fertile ground for letting that breathe. So the hooker story that he concocts, he thinks that plays
Because that has...
More importantly...
That leaves me with a lot of questions.
Novak thinks that plays... It is nonsensical. Like, utter horseshit. No one would believe that. Oh, he's going to prove how butch he is by pulling over and grabbing a prostitute and having her blow both of us. But the condom with my semen is going to end up on his dick.
His lawyer's like, I have an explanation for that. I don't think that explains why the condom with your... Like,
nope.
Like, that's not how condoms
That's not
work.
A kink. That's not how condoms... That's not a kink. Oh, no, I want to get blown with your besemened condom on my dick.
Do you know it's not easy to put on a condom that's already been used?
Or been ejaculated into, yeah. Oh, here's my ejact condom. Throw it on, brother. That'll show you're straight. So then we get the note that they have the same HIV mutation, but it's not conclusive. I didn't look into science there because
I didn't care. And but Novak's like, no one cares. The jury's not going to care.
Yeah, like, Novak's cared. No. Novak's like, no one cares. I'm just going to blow all of this shit up. Also, she knows what HIPAA is, but doesn't honor HIPAA at all.
The thing is, though, like when Novak hears like his explanation of the crime, she's like, this is probably bullshit, but I can't win this court case, right? Like that's what I hear. Like, so the only way I can win this court case is by narrowly threading the line between being permanently disbarred.
There's no narrowly threading the line. She should be permanently disbarred.
Yes.
At the end of this episode.
Yes. Well, in the middle.
No
of
question.
This
She should be suspended.
Yeah. She should be fired from the DA's
forever.
Office and disbarred. Yeah. Uh-huh. Because, yeah, she's influencing, like, the case with this shit and divulging people's, you know, privileged medical status. Yeah. So really fucked up shit, Novak.
Yeah, HIPAA's a thing.
HIPAA is a thing, and lawyers understand how that works. But also, like... You can't, like, I think there's probably rules about influencing witnesses. It's like witness tampering. Witness tampering
Wait,
is a
huh?
thing.
What?
I believe.
That's a thing?
Anyways, I think.
Yeah, we can rate this.
Yeah, we're
only an hour and 55 minutes into this, Patreon listeners.
Yeah, let's rank this one, Josh. So, of course, we rank these episodes every week. We have a rigorous 4-criteria 10-point scale on which we judge these episodes. We are trying to come up with a composite scale, which will allow us a composite score, rather, which will allow us to rank this against all the other episodes of this beautiful and strange show that we have watched so much. So
episodes of the strange this week.
Yeah, this one is,
I guess, in both ways.
This one is going to be like a tale of two different ranks, right? Because I think. I have a feeling, I'm wish casting here, or just maybe just kind of giving a preview. I think on two of the scores, it's going to rank very low. And on two of the scores, it's going to rank very high. So let's start with those low scores, Josh. Quality. This is a 2, right?
Yeah. It's not unwatchable.
It's not unwatchable. Good. It is kind of funny at times, and it is like problematic enough that it is like it makes you go, "What?"
And you could fear you could, and you could maybe talk me into a 3, but that's as high as I could possibly go. And I don't think it's a 3. I think it's a 2.
I think it's a 2. I don't think it's. I think that they so misjudged like the kind of time resources that they had. That they actually blew the story that could have been a good story.
Uh-huh.
Like there was
a good story here.
Yeah, the down low
culture story without the red herring could have theoretically played in an interesting way.
Exactly. As indelicately as season 5 would have treated it, they
delicate.
It still is an interesting story.
Shocking.
It's like fresh powder, right, at the ski slope. Like, it is definitely, like, an interesting story that hasn't been done to death, like so many other things have. And instead, they wasted half of the episode on a red herring that is pretty hard to watch in 2022. And that's a problem, I think, for the show. So the three that it could have got for being fun, I think it loses because it just like wasted screen time on something really dumb.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Next category, guests. I think Josh, I don't see any reason to not give it a one.
I think it's a one.
There's nobody that stands out. There's no stunt casting. There's no really standout performances. I mean,
no, it's a one.
Yeah. I don't really have a problem giving it a one. I don't think anybody warrants more than that, sadly.
No.
Now, problematic. This is really fucking problematic, right? And it's problematic in ways that are both really not fun and in ways that are pretty damn fun. Like the whole scene where they're trying to, where Elliot's like going like, but the lipstick should be smudged.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like how fantastic is that?
That's peak Munch My Benson shit right there.
Yeah.
Elliot imagining.
I think it's a nine, right? It's not a 10.
It gets a mark.
You could talk me into an eight maybe, but it's definitely not a 10. It's an 8 or 9.
I think it's a 9 because I think it is just like, it is problematic from second one, right? Like as we're
at least, yeah. With the racist music cues. And then by second 15,
it's going into overdrive. Like it is.
Yeah, by second 15, it's full on transphobia for the next 5 minutes.
Well, yeah. Yeah, definitely for it. It spans the credits, the transphobia.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, the first it's a very short cold open.
Yeah.
It's I think 2 minutes in total, but
yeah.
It's problematic.
Yeah, and then we get all the kind of
the download stuff and the like complete lack of understanding of how the fucking Kinsey spectrum works.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, whatever.
I mean, it's all problematic, but it is, it's the transphobia shit.
I mean, I think felt compelled to do a count.
And that's a good sign for this score, right?
For us. Yeah. Yes. when you're counting and the entirety of the count.
But it's not.
Is there are 3, 7, 8,
yeah,
17. There's 21 instances which are absolutely would not fly in 2020.
Yeah. Now,
let alone 2022.
I grant you that it is a tick lower than Steve from Sex and the City, cackling and staring at.
Yeah, but Amanda he Rollins was right though.
And telling he was her that right. she would be
more interesting
if he could cut off her leg.
Yeah. Well, part of her.
So it is a tick lower than that. Okay, 9 in problematic. All right, now, depth and breadth of lives ruined. We have a Bronx ADA who's dead.
Yeah.
We have another Bronx ADA who's in jail. So the Bronx, like...
And we've got this whole Poker Night Down Low scene where all of their...
It's a Poker Night Down Low AIDS epidemic is what we've got.
Yeah.
So we've got
It's not hooked level.
It's an outbreak. We'll call it an outbreak.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got an outbreak. Dustin Hoffman.
So are we talking to 7?
Dustin Hoffman showing up with the moon suit.
Are we talking to 7 because of the HIV?
Because
so many innocents are being HIV'd here.
7 sounds right. But think about the caseload in the Bronx courthouse right now. Because 2 of your ADAs are now gone. And this is already...
dear God, think about the Bronx ADAs.
The whole Bronx is fucked right now. Like, how many of these people...
Yeah, but they have that weird stilted DA that they've all got to fucking talk to. Like, no, he doesn't
cares?
Deserve
He's
to
just
have
a politician.
DA,
who cares,
ADAs?
Man? Who cares? He's just a politician. But think of how many dudes are rotting in Rikers right now because the DA's office can't clear their case log. Because all of their fucking guys are dropping like flies.
I don't think it's a factor, but I don't think it moves the needle.
Okay.
I think we're still talking 7, right?
Yeah. And I mean, we've got like all their wives and kids.
I know that's why it's a 7 and not a 2.
Yeah. It's pretty brutal, but yeah, it's definitely 7. I think you're right. I think it's a 7. We have one body, but
Liv's not going to have sex again for 3 years. Because she's not going to know if it's, you know,
a false negative,
a closeted,
but Yeah, it really does kind of like... poor Liv, man. Poor Liv cannot only, catch a relationship break.
Only kind
break.
Of, because she's... I'm sorry, but she's not concerned enough to get tested in a responsible way. So, like, I can't give her too much...
And she's also, like, not broken out up about it, right? She's just like, oh, yeah, I know that guy.
Yeah, she's basically just working a case manically.
Yeah. I mean, if she cared about him, like, if it was Cassidy, right, she would... I would hope
she cared about him just as barely as she does about Cassidy.
She would pull herself, right? And let Rollins take the lead or something. In that case.
Theoretically, but she doesn't really do that ever.
Anyways.
She doesn't ever pull herself off the case.
No, especially not that she's in charge. Anyways, yeah. Guys, this gives us a 4.75, which just so happens to tie it with last week's episode, Imprisoned Lives. Which was also strange.
Which I barely remember.
Featured knockoff Disney, knockoff Muppets. That's about all I remember from it. It did have, that was the one, that was the Ariel Castro one, man. It's kind of
not cool.
What's shocking about that episode is that using that content, we only gave it a 5 as problematic because it's just,
it was that
bad. It was just that shitty of an episode. Anyways. Uh-huh. That's where we're at. We're at a run of either we see a lot of Pablo Schreiber or we're seeing a bad episode. I'm hoping that
we're still not that far removed from some pretty fun shit that we've done.
I know. It's we're not that far removed in listener terms, but in Josh and me terms, it's been a minute. And
yes, it's been a long time for you and I.
I think it's time to roll the dice, and what I'm hoping is that we get a fun one next time.
Going over to episode.lol, which was built for this podcast by friend of the pod Flat. The tape is spinning. Bill and Ted are decidedly displeased with being flung through the tubes of space-time to land in yet another episode of SVU. And the episode that they and we have landed in is Gridiron Soldier, Season 15, Episode 16. Sounds like we've got ourselves a football episode.
Another football episode, because this was a football episode too.
Indeed. Detective Rollins is contacted by a hometown friend when his son, a high school football star, goes missing in New York. Mm. Rollins seeks help with her escalating problems.
Uh-oh.
Well, sounds like we're finally getting some Rollins gambling issue episode action.
It's been this coming one, a long time. We've known.
It's a long time. That we've managed to dodge it for 109 episodes is honestly pretty fucking shocking. So, this episode features Winston Duke, who Black Panther fans would know.
Mm, okay.
He's the, like, head of the sort of rival tribe. Features Thomas Sadowski, who fans of Life in Pieces and The Newsroom and the John Wick movies would know. Mm. It also features Glenn Morshower, who fans of Friday Night Lights and The Resident and 24 would know. Fingers crossed that it's not too much of a Rollins gambling addiction episode, but eventually it was going to have to happen. And this sounds like a possibly fun way to maybe deal with it.
I got to say, at least it's not the Rollins sister episodes.
Yeah, if I saw Kim in this, I'd be running for the hills. I'd seriously be thinking about, like, shuttering the podcast. So, as always, thank you to our patrons.
Yes, you guys are amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, you're the best. Uh-huh. At this point, we'll have had our second movie club episode.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Which will be about Ghoulies, mm-hmm. which Adam and I have not recorded yet, but no. We'll have already dropped.
Yeah.
It's possible by the time this episode drops, it will have been on Fuck My Work Life.
Again, yeah.
Hopefully. A second time. Mm-hmm. We'll see. That's sort of in the works, mm-hmm. but they also have to edit their episodes.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I know we've been talking about it with them, though. We have an old episode of Fuck My Work Life where you can listen to Adam and I talk about our jobs. You can listen to us talking about The Thin Man on... it's probably about a month and a half old at this point mm-hmm. when this episode drops, but on Chicklet at the Movies. So if you go to Chicklet Pod, but yeah, so there are those episodes of other podcasts that you can hear us on. Also, again, our Patreon is very fucking reasonably priced. Mm-hmm. Adam and I have been talking for 2 hours and 12 minutes for Patreon listeners, yeah. but for you randos who are just downloading this, it's probably more like 1 hour and 30 minutes.
I fucking hope so.
There's so much weird talk in this episode that Adam will edit out.
I enjoy the weird talk, but the nice thing about this is that there's like discrete chunks of it that are just like, okay, that's going away.
Yeah. I think that I feel like both you and I can feel freer now that we have that other avenue. Like, I feel like the people who are enjoying that part of the podcast mm-hmm. can subscribe to the Patreon at a very reasonable price.
That's true.
Get the episodes a week early, mm-hmm. Both the video and the audio version, and, you know, have the weird diversions where we talk about Coward of the County for fucking 5 minutes.
Or
Righteous Gemstones for at least 5 minutes. And that shit is not going to make the normal episode.
No.
Yeah. I mean, we did 26 minutes of pre-talk in this episode, which is
very little of that's
fucking
making it.
Insane. Almost none of it's making it. Adam talked so much about his New York life, and that's probably getting
it
axed.
Can't stay. It can't stay. I would love to keep it, but it can't.
Yeah. But it'll be very easy to cut out for mm-hmm. him. So bully for Adam. We are on the socials on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as Munch My Benson. Mm-hmm. We are on Reddit. We have a subreddit r/MunchMyBenson. You can go to our website, munchmybenson.com. You can email us munchmybenson@gmail.com. Mm-hmm.
I would assume that if you go to a place and you type in Munch My Benson without spaces, there's a pretty good chance that either we have that or it doesn't exist. So.
So if you go to Pornhub/MunchMyBenson, there's nothing there. But
yet.
Yet. Make that your goal, fans.
That'll be our higher Patreon tier when we incorporate one.
I don't know what that would be, Adam.
Well, it'll definitely incorporate somehow transferring become to
condos. Yeah, be jizzed dicks with becomed condoms from other people on them.
Yeah.
That's going to be the new fetish. Much My Benson fetish is going to be putting condoms filled with EJAC on other dicks.
Hey, man, different strokes for different folks. You know what I'm saying?
And different condoms for different dicks.
Hey, we're GGG here, you know. Anyways.
Son of a bitch. Okay, so, yeah, join the Patreon. Guys. You're getting so much weird shit on the Patreon.
This week is definitely paying for that Patreon subscription.
Oh, yeah, you're getting seriously probably 45 minutes of weird shit. Adam has to go to sleep.
I sure do.
I have to go back to reading Lonesome Dove, which is probably, you're not going to know why I was talking about that either, because that's definitely getting cut. Listen to indie podcasts. Please. Listen to Fuck My Work Life. Mm-hmm. Listen to Chicklet Pod. Listen to, I'm trying to think of other ones that I listen to. And now I've been drinking and talking for too long and can't. Mm-hmm. Support indie podcasts.
Please.
This is not nearly as easy as it seems like it is, because you're only hearing the
end result.
You're only hearing the easy part, the part where we talk. Everything else is awful.
I On that note, guys, get munching, okay?
Yeah, but get consent.
Sorry, no saliva, but I did find something interesting. Lipstick left this imprint on the condom.
It's a crisp, clean print.
And a problem. Oral sex, it should be smudged.
Right. I think the lip print was put on the condom after it was used.
You're saying she put a condom on him, killed him.
And kissed it afterwards.